אתם מאזינים למצפן, הפודקאסט שנותן לכם ידע וכלים בכל מה שקשור לעולם המולטי פמילי, מבית ולורה, המתמחים במולטי פמילי בלבד. אם אתם מתעניינים או משקיעים בנדלן בארצות הברית, אתם במקום הנכון. ועכשיו, תרשו לי להציג את המארח שלכם, רועי מעודי.
שבוע טוב לכל המאזינים של הפודקאסט שלנו. אנחנו השבוע בפודקאסט די מיוחד, אנחנו נמצאים בארצות הברית, באינדיאנפוליס, ואנחנו אחרי, למעשה ביום האחרון של הביקור שלנו, ואנחנו מנצלים את השעות האחרונות ביחד, לעשות פודקאסט קצת מיוחד, באנגלית, ואנחנו הולכים לדבר עם סמנכ"ל הכספים של החברה והשותף שלי בוולורה. אנחנו עם צ'אד קנוורת'. So, switching to English, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. Good afternoon.
How much have you suffered me for the past few days? How much have you suffered from 1 to 10?
Oh my gosh. I don't think the range is good enough.
Okay, so we're taking advantage of the opportunity that we're together. We tried to do a recorded podcast over Zoom. It didn't went well. It didn't go well. So we said that we're going to get together. We're going to record. Time is now. So I want to ask you a few questions.
Okay.
And before I start asking those professional business questions, I want everybody that listens to hear it from your mouth of how did we meet? What's your version of the events that took place?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is fun. And interesting that how this whole thing came about is I was looking to partner with some other real estate professionals that had experience and knowledge in areas of the industry that I didn't with their skill sets. I knew what my skill set was and how I could provide value in that area. It was, where can I find someone that aligns with my values and vision for building the company? I was working with an individual named Brian Murray, who you know, obviously.
Yeah, good friend.
Well, and Brian and I were looking to find deals together for a number of years. And we just things weren't clicking right. And he was going a different direction. And so he calls me up one day and he says, "Hey, Chad, listen, I got somebody I think you should meet." I said, "Great. Tell me a little about him." He goes, "Well, his name's Roy. And he, I think, has some very similar values you do. And you guys could complement each other with your skill set, as well as what you're both appear to be trying to do." And he goes, "But I don't want to give him your name yet or give him his your contact information yet or give you his contact information yet. Well, let me just check with him first." Right.
Okay.
So he took very good steps of trying to figure out if we'd be a good match.
Yeah. But Brian is a great guy and he knows what he's doing.
Yep. Yep. So he introduced you to me and you ran me through this long list of interview questions.
The partnership questionnaire.
Yeah, exactly. And which was fantastic because I was very happy you did that.
It took us 4 days, to complete.
Yep. And I knew when you presented that to me that you're the guy. I just knew it, that you're going to be a partner of mine and I'm going to be a partner of yours, because just that effort alone and that thought process told me you have the same values I do.
So I knew you're going to be my partner when I called you. It was, I think, Tuesday afternoon. And I remember talking to you for a few minutes. And I always say that God gives gifts to every person, has its own gift. My gift is knowing people. And I called you up. And I knew instantly, like, okay, that's the guy I want to work with. But I think you said something very important when it comes to partnership. A lot of people don't know how to do that right. And I think the one thing you said that is overlooked by a lot of people is to have the same set of values. Mm-hmm. You can complement each other's skill set.
Yep.
But if you do not have the same set of values, it's simply not going to last. It's going to work for 1 year, 6 months, 2 years, but eventually it's going to be...
Yep, the breakup eventually comes.
The breakup is there from the beginning. So our stories align, which is good. That means that I did good.
Let me jump in real quick, because you broke one of your rules.
Okay.
You married me the first day you met me.
Oh, yeah. It sometimes it happens. You know, you exactly. you have those exclusions that, you know, that rock stars that you meet.
Yeah. That's okay.
So you answered my second personal question that was meant to be, what was the moment that you felt were meant to be? And for you, it was that partnership questionnaire and that thorough process.
Yes.
That, you know, and I came to you after I had like three or four partnerships that I did wrong.
Yes.
And I learned from them. And that's where I built that questionnaire. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, this time I'm doing it right. The next question I have for you on a personal level is, you're an amazing finance guy. One of the best I ever came across. What attracted you to work in finance?
That's a great question. It goes back to when I was a kid. There's a series of events that took place in my personal life, as well as just in my DNA of being in finance, accounting, what have you. First of all, from the DNA side, on my mother's side of the family, her father was an accountant. And on the business side, my father owned his own business. And so those sort of just two married together. And as I was growing up, I leaned really towards math and business and finance. It just attracted to me. The statistics side was really cool. Another piece that just of my life experience that made me realize that that was a pathway I wanted to take. When I was 13 years old, my folks were subject to a Ponzi scheme. Their personal financial advisor, stockbroker, I don't know what her position was at the time. Her name was Molly Wilson, and she basically stole all their money.
Wow.
She really did. Anything that my father was doing financially went through her. We were in the middle of, hey, things are great. Let's remodel the house, the kitchen. Okay, now we're going to draw money. Wait, there's no money. Wait, I can't get a hold of my finance. She's not repot. What's going on? Being at that age, I was aware of what was going on and the impact it had on me and all the people it touched, because I got to go sit in court, see all those interviews with people taking a stand, what took place. And I knew right there and then that I'm going to protect people's money. I'm going to protect myself, and I'm going to know what it is to manage financials. And so that's what put me on that pathway to finance.
How is it? Do you remember how it feels as a 13-year-old? I bet it's scary.
Oh, yeah. It was very scary. College fund gone. How are we putting food on the table? How are we paying the bills? My parents are, I don't know how I'm going to make the mortgage payment this month. We're going to have to figure out something.
And like your superheroes, your mom and dad are like vulnerable all of a sudden.
They're vulnerable. Arguments were taking place quite a bit. I don't know. Most families, finances are a big topic, and it leads to divorce quite a bit.
Yeah, sometimes it's taboo.
Exactly. So they stuck together, still together today, which is fantastic. But yeah, we had to hunker down into one room. We all had to sleep in one room because the house was destroyed from all the construction work that was going on, or not stopped from going on.
So I'll tell you something that... in the questionnaire, that was one of the questions. And when I heard, and you said, you can Google it, the Molly Wilson story. So anybody that wants to, if you're listening and you want to get more information on Chad's why, that's what I call it, your why, you can Google the Molly Wilson story and see everything. But when you told me that, when that person stole my family's money, that's when I decided that I'm going to learn this industry inside out, and I'm going to protect the investor's money. Mm-hmm. That to me was the key sentence that I knew, okay, this is the guy I want to have beside me going that journey. Because you have a strong why and you have this pain point that you get it. You feel what it's like taken away from something that you own.
Yep.
So that's very, very strong. So, okay, personal aside, let's dive into business.
Okay.
And let's talk about the year of 2024,
the year of
changes, exciting. And I think it's going to be a very interesting year. But the question for me, the question that I have for you is, what are your investment priorities for the coming year? And are there any new developments or acquisitions planned for Valour?
Yeah, I think so. Valour is in a great position to experience some strong growth. The vision of the company is really starting to align with the clouds are opening up.
Yep.
And we can really see what the vision looks like and know how to go achieve that. 2024 is going to be a big year for Valour because some repositioning that's taking place from asset set or currently under management, as well as the economy itself is shifting and stabilizing a little bit from what I can tell, especially in the debt markets. But it's going to allow us to really find those quality assets because our standards are so high. The ability to find those assets are going to start to be more available to us. And so I think 2024 is really more, I think, as a new start for Valour.
I agree, and I call it Valour 2.0.
Yeah.
Everybody that speaks to me, I said Valour 2.0. And I agree. This is going to be a 2024 for me is going to be a mixture of ending those challenges that everybody faced in the last 2 years, and we faced it as well, but with a face towards new opportunities, new gems, new real opportunities. And for me, the most important thing is the stupid money is going to go away.
Yeah.
So a lot of stupid money was injected because cap rates were so low and, you know, you could make money out of anything. Right now, you need skills to make money in real estate.
Absolutely.
So that's the good point. So you kind of touched it a little bit, but I want to go deeper. How are we preparing or have prepared for those economic downturns that we faced? Mm-hmm. And of course, rising interest rates.
Yeah. So there's a couple things we look at, right? One would be, what's the future growth from an income standpoint on the asset or the property that we're projecting? And it really is dependent market to market and asset class. And we need to be very careful on those rent growth projections now because inflation is starting to taper down. However, there's still chances of recession taking place, which obviously affects people's jobs and their ability to pay. And what are those priorities?
So if you're getting an offering memorandum from a broker that says 10% rent increase every year, that is not something you're going to buy.
Exactly. And that may be a broker we don't want to work with.
Exactly.
Right?
Okay.
Just because they're pie in the sky. Or the seller is pie in the sky and trying to sell something that's not reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so our efforts looking in some deal like that is going to be wasted. So we're going to focus on deals that have very serious sellers that want to move on and they're motivated to move on. But that's just the market and the operational side of things. The debt market, when it comes to protecting from interest rate risk, my vision is rates may or may not come down, but I don't see rates going up. And if they do, it may be very small. But to protect ourselves in those events, we're looking at fixed rate debt as well as buying rate caps up front for a series of years in order to protect the investment's cash flows. And on the same time, put a large amount of working capital reserves in the bank. Now, what I see from other investors out there looking at their underwriting, they're putting a small amount of working capital and they're getting these big, huge checks from these large companies. And I don't necessarily believe that that is the right path. We want to protect the investment with a large reserve. And if the deal works with that large reserve, I know that we're in a position of a nice healthy return and outperformance.
So that was a very key statement, and that basically emphasizes the Valour core values, which is we preserve capital first and we generate healthy returns afterwards. So our
Correct.
primary goal is to preserve capital. We don't want to lose 1 cent of our investors' hard-earned money. And we face those interest rates. And when I mentioned Valour 2.0, it's like we had that 1.5, 2 years that were very rough. Interest rates were on the rise. I don't think anybody projected that high of an increase that the Fed made. And we took all the lessons we learned from the last 2 years. And this is why you're saying the new Valour or Valour 2.0, because we took everything that we learned, we experienced all of those challenges, and we right now implemented them into our new deals. And already we have the deal Bradford Point that we acquired in November, and we're seeing night and day differences between those deals and this deal. How well learned we are, how did we grow, how we improved the analyzing and the operational side of the house. So it pretty much looks a different company, and this is why I'm so excited about the next deals that we're gonna acquire. You're constantly obsessed with debt markets. You check them daily. You check numbers. You speak to our lenders. You speak to brokers. You're pretty much invested heavily in that multifamily market. What are your thoughts on the current state of the multifamily market in the US? And what do you think are the biggest challenges and opportunities that you see in the near future?
From the multifamily space, well, there's a lot of talk about all this bad performance from bridge debt loans that are out there. And I don't think there is much as it's being led on from what I'm seeing.
I agree.
There are going to be those opportunities. There's always going to be opportunities. It doesn't matter what market we're in. It's always going to be opportunities in order for us to make money. It's how do we underwrite to that market condition at that time to get the opportunity. The future, I think that we're going to see some rates dip, which is going to be valuable for the market as a whole. I don't see us going back to where we were in 2021 with those low rates, but we were already starting to see some stabilization in that debt market side. But from a multifamily's point of view, I still see rent growth, employment, and income growth bouncing back. The single family home prices haven't really been hit too hard, which provides opportunity for multifamily investing. As home prices go down, there might be more folks that can buy single family homes, which is counterintuitive to what you might hear. But it's really driven based on the inflation and the debt markets. The credit card debt that's sitting out there right now in the US economy is at the highest peak ever. And I think that's going to have an impact on people's ability to purchase homes, which is going to lead them to a demand of multifamily, which also leads to a demand of rising prices in multifamily, especially for value add. So I think that's going to be a really good opportunity for us to continue our business plans and focus on those value-add properties.
I agree. I agree with everything that you're saying, and we're backing it up with all the data that we're seeing, the CoStar reports. So the future looks bright.
It does. It very does.
Okay, so let me go to the next question. When you're going and finding those investment opportunities for us to acquire, what are your criteria that based on that you're selecting the next investment? What are your preferred property types, and what locations do you like best?
Sure. So, when we look at deals and we're trying to acquire deals, there's two aspects to it. One, it's the market in which the property is situated in, located. And two, it's what's the performance of the property and the potential performance of the property. When we look at the markets, we're looking for certain things that fit growth opportunity and sustainability. I usually look for sustainability first and then look for growth. A lot of folks say go for emerging markets, emerging markets, emerging markets. Emerging markets go up and down, but sustainability over time leads me to believe that there's less risk. So I'm looking for decent home prices. I'm looking for average incomes to be more than three times what the average rent is in that marketplace and or for the deal, as well as a good demographic mix so that we know that the tenants that are going to be living in that area will be able to pay their rent. Because cash is king, collections is more important than anything.
As we learned in the past two
Yes,
years.
as we've learned in the past years. So it's not just income on the income statement, it's what are you collecting, right? You're
Exactly.
putting money in the bank, right? So there's the market side of things. When it comes to the underwriting the deal, our standards are fairly straightforward. It's got to be economically efficient. What I mean by that is we need to have a number of a large enough income to pay for the staff that's on site, overcome the insurance costs that are on the rise, as well as the taxes. Those are the big things. It's a must in order to operate. But also at the same time, we're looking at those assets classes, B and C class assets, that are in an area that's surrounded by higher income producing properties. And that allows us to find that opportunity. So if we're in a sustainable market that doesn't have the ups, peaks and valleys of up and down movement, then we know that value add asset consists can is going to be able to perform when we implement our business plan. So those deals I'm actually looking for. I like the B and A minus class assets because it attracts a tenant base or resident that cares about their credit, has a good income, has education, understands the value of paying their bills on time and the capability to pay their bills on time. But that doesn't always work. Sometimes you have a C class asset in a B area and you contract that B class resident. It's a little more challenging to turn that over to manage, but it affords us and our investors larger returns.
Very, very large returns. Those are the type of deals that I like best. Class B areas, like nice homes. Get that Class C ugly property problems. We transition it, and then we get a home run usually when we execute the business plan.
For example, the market we just drove yesterday, we're not going to say it here, but the market we just drove yesterday and some other investors that don't want to go into these so-called smaller markets because they don't know. Those are where we want to be because we're not fighting against the masses to win deals there. We have a good relationship. We're eliminating the sharks. We're swimming in blue water. And it's those gems. It's those, like Roy always says, like you always say, it's those gems. Find me that home run gem, right?
That blue ocean.
Exactly.
And I think we have one deal in that small in another small market. That we had a home run and then some,
Yes.
which I'm excited. And the market we toured yesterday, for me, looks very promising. I felt very comfortable, looks nice. And we have a few deals that we're checking out there,
That's right.
so
The
more to
market
come on
data
that.
supports it, which is even better.
Exactly. We have all those reports that we checked. Nice. So when you speak to almost anybody at our industry, bankers, brokers, even investors, syndicators, everybody, they all have their view of what will be the emerging trends in our industry, in the multifamily industry. What do you see? What do you think are the biggest emerging trends in our industry, and how are you going to prepare yourself for them?
I think there's services that are being available to residents, technological services, things like Amazon Hub, keyless entry, smart living, right? So, and that's moving in your A-class asset, and it's already being put into A-class asset. But as technology continues to develop and improve, more and more residents are going to see that as a value add piece of living. And they're going to want a piece of that. Not every tenant or asset, or every apartment can actually fit into that box, but I see that as value add for the resident to attract the type of resident base we want. And I think that's going to continue to grow and grow and grow. It's just going to take some time.
Okay, that's interesting. And the more the technology is going to get developed, it's going to be cheaper and cheaper to acquire.
Correct.
So that's going to increase our ROI on that investment.
Yeah.
So that's a good indicator. So you're acting as Valour's CFO. How do you think the role of a CFO will evolve in the multifamily industry over time? Or is it that typical classic role that stands still for like 30, 40 years?
Well, I think a CFO role is really twofold. One, managing the financials, doing the tax returns, making sure the cash is managed properly and used properly, and then providing financial analysis in order to make good decisions for what the company's vision is. That is a standard role. That's really what the role is for, as well as also looking at what the market opportunities are out there from shifts in the economy. That, I think, is going to lend to the vision of the company and help the company pivot as the economy shifts. Because from a CEO role, they have the vision, they see the operations, they can see what's happening in the economy, but then how can you put the data together to make that work? I think that's where I see the CFO role really spending a lot of value time in there.
So you think the CFO role will evolve in a way that the CFO will be more exposed or in touch with the vision and not just stay in his own room with the numbers, with the Excels, and just make assumptions that are not attached basically to reality sometimes?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So we'll see, the CFO will see what's happening in the economy. Where is the market going? Where is the industry going? And can relay that back to the vision of the company and say, we have opportunity here, or we should start thinking about preparing a shift in the market that we can protect the capital and our investments.
Yeah, and I can say firsthand that we're working right now and evolving and connecting you to the vision is allowing us to be much more agile and adapt and generate much better deals. And I agree completely what you're saying. And I hope a lot of more CFOs will go that route, because I think it's not evolving. It's a must.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yep.
Okay. So are there any specific challenges or opportunities facing the multifamily industry in Valour's investment regions, the markets that we operate in?
So are you, make sure I understand your question, right?
So the markets that we work in.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you see specific challenges or specific opportunities that are unique to those markets that you don't see in other markets, like major metros, like Austin, Texas?
So San Francisco, for example.
San Francisco.
Is sinking.
Right? Okay.
Everyone's shutting their doors, giving the keys back.
Yeah.
The markets that we're focused on, as I think I discussed earlier, is stability. It's your boring growth markets.
That's what I always say. You want a boring investment.
That's right.
You don't want that spikes and peaks.
Texas. Phoenix is having problems right now. And 3 years ago, it was the hottest market in the area, in the US.
Texas is also suffering
Yeah,
big time.
exactly. So in the market, so we're looking at the risks are very low, because it's steady Eddie growth. Historically, it's been just a boring economy and marketplace to be in. It has low unemployment that doesn't peak and valley very often. It has an abundance of industry. It has massive transportation and supply chain and logistics funneling through that throughout the US. So it's constant movement, in order to drive e-commerce across the state borders, state lines. Not to mention, it's got a large population base that doesn't move. They don't pick up and move to other cities, other states. They're born and raised and they stay there. So when you have less turnover, that means you're going to have less costs.
We recorded a podcast episode of the cost of turnover and how does that impact the value of a property and how that affects cash flow and basically distributions.
That's right.
So if I put it in a sentence, other market challenges that we're seeing is our market opportunity.
Yes.
So that's in simple words.
That's right.
That's interesting. I didn't look at it that way. That's very smart. Okay, so I'll get back to the personal because we're kind of in towards finishing this episode. As a CFO of Valour, what are you most proud of? What achievements are you most proud of at that role in the company?
Is the brand of Valour and the values that we have that's being broadcast with our business partners from lenders, brokers, insurance agents. Our most valuable partners are our investment partners. I am most proud that we are in a position that they understand our values, and we've proven it with our actions. And that is leading to stronger relationships, which opens more opportunities. That's what I'm most proud of.
I agree. I'll say it in different words, and that's one of our core values that is written in our book. It's we always do what's right, even if it's not profitable to us. And it's easy to say. But I think the last 2 years have demonstrated that we stand behind our words and we've done what's right. And I also want to say that you should be proud of a lot of things that we accomplished during those 2 years. But the one important thing is we constantly fought the challenges. We constantly overcame them. We won challenge by challenge. They're not done yet. We have room
Oh,
to
there's always
go.
going to be more challenges in front of us
Exactly.
that we haven't seen yet.
But we're winning, we're fighting, we're overcoming, and we're becoming better. So I think that is the achievements that I'm most proud of. And I'm happy to walk that path with you, buddy.
You as well.
So that was an emotional moment. Now let's go to
Wow.
the next question. What are you most passionate about? I know the answer to this, but I'll ask you so the audience can hear it. What are you most passionate about outside of work? What are your hobbies or interests?
Well, I love seeing my children do what they do when it comes to any type of activity that they're focused on, whether it be baseball, gymnastics, piano, and developing. I love that. I love seeing that them develop. That's just the coach in me.
And I want to say something I heard from a friend. They're not your kids. They're Austin and Charlotte.
That's right. They're Austin and Charlotte.
I
We didn't name them after cities on purpose. That just fit off the tongue
love
nicely. But I love being a part of their growth and even seeing them grow from afar with other coaches. It was hard for me to give up coaching for my son, right?
that.
Let someone else coach him. But it's important. It's an important growth for them to see other experiences from other coaches. So that is something I'm passionate about. Also, golf.
You're obsessed with
I'm
golf.
obsessed with golf.
I thought that would be the first answer,
No,
but
it's second answer, right? So I'm obsessed with golf. And it's not necessarily just going out and playing, it's the challenge to get better. The sport itself, or the game itself, however you want to look at it, is not easy, and it's very, very frustrating. And the time and effort you have to put in it to improve, not just physically the game, but mentally, to overcome those challenges while you play and still be cordial and respectful for the folks that are playing with you.
and not break the club and walk
Not
away.
break the club or throw it in the water or anything, and taking those frustrations and being able to channel them into something positive is something I'm passionate about. And that's what I take that away from that sport, and it helps me in our business
Yeah.
go and become successful.
And I'm seeing it flat out, and I'm always looking at you and Vicky and other people that we work with, and we've been there from day one, and I've seen you and me and how we communicate, and I've seen your personality and how it's shifting, and who have you become after a few years, and who have I become because of you, thanks to you, because of that constant feedback. The one thing that I really love about you and admire about you is the fact that you have no ego when it comes to business. So when I have a problem, I know that I can always come to you and criticize you in a good way, and I'm not going to get, attitude or, what do you think? Who you are? What are you talking about? And we have our fights.
Yeah, of course.
They're fun,
Of
but we always hug it out,
course.
and I love you.
Yeah.
And we ended up. But I think that is the one important thing that I can say in the company. Nobody has an ego. Everybody can be criticized. Everybody can be question marked. And we look at it in a good way because we can all make mistakes. But it's the other people that we work with that has to question us. And we need to be brave enough to say, okay, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I need to improve, and that's hard. And because of that relationship, it's easier and easier to be done every day, week, month, year that passes by.
Well, I can tell you that I appreciate the way you don't hold back and are straight to the point, and you share with me and Vicky and vice versa. That is a sign of good, strong relationships and growth. Because if you held it back and didn't share that about how someone could improve or something that they don't see, then there wouldn't be any growth, right? I think it's amazing. So I definitely appreciate it.
I'll tell you two things. One, I'm happy that the direct approach has been passed away to the teams, the on-sites, the property managers. Everybody knows that we would like to be communicated direct, straightforward. And I'm always calling it the Israeli way, not the US politeness way. Just talk to me flat out. Tell me what it is. I'm a big boy. I can handle it. Don't sugarcoat anything for me. But I think it also improves communication tremendously.
Of course.
And Vicky, if you're going to listen to this episode, we know how frustrated you were at the beginning, but right now she embraces it. She loves it. And she's amazing. And we love you, Vicky, if you hear it, if you hear this podcast, and I speak for the behalf of both of us. So the last question for me is going to be an open question to you. I've asked you a lot of questions. Is there anything else you would like me to ask you that I haven't asked you already?
That is interesting. I wasn't even prepared for that.
That's the purpose of this question.
What question you haven't asked me yet that I want you to ask me?
Yeah. If you want, you can think about it and we can record it on our next visit.
I don't know. I guess that's good. I don't know.
Chad's speechless. That's a first.
I don't know what makes me different from most other CFOs, I guess you could say, or folks that are in this role.
Okay. What makes you different than most CFOs?
I enjoy being social. I enjoy being the having I enjoy being able to communicate complex financial things to folks that don't understand that world. I enjoy reaching out and talking to people at random. It's just natural to me. And I think that allows me to be very successful in what we're doing, because when I can contact and talk to anybody without any issues or worries and just make a connection quickly, that allows me to be able to provide more value to what we're doing. Because I know where I am financial skill wise, but also social skill wise, and marrying the two together, I think is a very unique characteristic that I have that gives me warmth when I'm able to communicate with somebody about something that's so complex.
I agree. And I think those words were very strong. So I'm not going to even add anything. So we'll wrap this episode now. And I would like to thank you for the time. We have a lot of work to do. So yes, we'll finish that podcast. I'll definitely want to do another one the next time we visit. And we'll think of a different aspect to attack on the questions. And until next time, thank you, Chad, for being on this episode.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
And I'll see you guys next week. Thank you.
Alright.
האזנתם למצפן. אם אתם מעוניינים לרכוש עוד ידע וכלים בעולם השקעות הנדלן, אנחנו מזמינים אתכם לבקר באתר שלנו www.valore.co.il. מחכים לכם בפרק הבא.